Hey everyone! Today we're excited here at Ex Libris to open a series of interviews with leaders from the academic world, who will share their views and visions about advancing the impact of academic research and discuss some of their goals and challenges in supporting researchers in their institutions. In our first conversation, we're delighted to host Martin Kirk, Director of Research Operations at King's College London. For Martin, university research is like a moonshot. His job is to reduce the drag. Let's start.
So I have a very interesting role that doesn't exist in many other places. It's called Function Lead Research and Researchers. And basically, I run the operation or the business of research support. So every aspect of central research support, from the kind of typical research development, pre-award to post-award to contracts, clinical trials, postgrad scholarships, commercialization, animal facilities, core facilities, you know, every part of the research enterprise. And I think it's a really good way of organizing the university, because we have a vice president of research who is my peer, and he focuses on the strategic aspects of research, and I just get the business done and make sure that our, you know, £250 million business runs smoothly.
Can you tell us, you know, what makes King's College unique? What are some of the characteristics that you're seeing that you like?
Yeah, I think what makes it kind of unique is that it's just the right size of a university that is world-class and large enough to have critical mass of really, you know, top-notch, world-class researchers. And at the same time, it's small enough to have nimble decision-making. And so the reason I came was because, you know, they wanted to engineer a transformation, and I had a track record of successful transformation. And so it's a place where, you know, big things can happen, and things can change very quickly and very nimbly. I'd say that's the main reason I came here. So, I mean, the research is absolutely world-class, but we do have a very nimble decision-making system. And the other thing I would say is I'm at the top table. So research operations is taken very seriously. I'm a member of the senior management team that sits with the senior VPs and the president, making decisions about how to run the place.
Say you were brought in to facilitate transformation. Can you be more specific, like what...
So I think if I'm honest, the Brits in general are quite far behind when it comes to, you know, the new generation of systems and business process. And so, you know, we have chronically under invested in systems. And so I think I was brought in to bring a new level of discipline, business discipline, deploy fit for purpose business systems and business process. So I think it was really to bring a level of international discipline and skill and, you know, really bring us up to, we've got world-class research, bring us up to world-class research administration. That was really the name of the game.
What does that take in your mind to have world-class research administration?
Well, I mean, I think it takes a business skill married to a deep appreciation of how research happens and is grown and encouraged and supported. And I think those two often don't go well together, and it's not a common competency to have the right balance between those two. And I think underlying that is skill in deploying systems and understanding of how IT systems can be deployed in our complex research environment, you know, to make us more efficient. And because there's some good numbers on the negative side of research administration, right? I mean, if you think about that as potentially administrative drag on the researchers, time that the researcher spends in compliance or other administrative task is time taken away from their research or productivity, right? So it's kind of an equation that says, if I can make the administration more efficient, then I can enhance researcher productivity by them enabling them to spend more time doing what they should be doing, which is doing research, right?
What are the trends in terms of research administration and supporting research that you're seeing? What are some of the exciting things that you're seeing?
Well, I think, you know, we're seeing a new level of system power. So I think the fact that we can now quite a lot more easily than in the past get systems talking to systems. So system integration is definitely one exciting opportunity that we can take advantage of on the business side of things. In terms of people, I think the excitement is really about internationalization and the power of, you know, transglobal research teams and efforts with really big strategic goals, difficult goals. So I think that's really exciting. And, you know, we're moving away so far away from the one researcher, one research grant model to huge international teams. That really takes some skill, but the upside is just huge. I think the impact agenda is really important and exciting as well. I mean, we are spending a lot of money on research in the UK, and our taxpayer says, thou shalt demonstrate the benefit to society. And so there's a lot of pressure on us to do a good job of that. And of course, in the UK, that translates into the REF, Research Excellence Framework, where every 7 years we have to do a submission, and it's coming up fairly soon, next year, November next year, where we have to demonstrate literally what our research outcomes have been and how that has impacted society. So I'm very excited. I think it's good that we are made accountable to show the impact of our specific research. You know, I think this open access, open science agenda is really important as well, and unlocking, you know, the benefit of big data sets and big data so that other researchers can collaborate and, you know, build on the shoulders kind of model. I think that's a really important thing. It's not easy to do, but, you know, I think Plan S has been important in helping us unlock that potential. So, you know, I think that's a really exciting thing, and we're getting our head around how to do that. You know, I think the whole metrics area has become a lot more exciting as well. I mean, for years, we've been sort of looking at things like citation impact, and we've been very focused on a traditional model of scholarship, you know, where you do a bunch of research and then you write it up in the various scholarly journals, you know, and you get your sort of citation impact, and that's the proxy for research excellence. I think it's a bit of an outdated model, and I think what's really exciting for me is the emergence of altmetrics and looking beyond the sort of traditional model of scholarship and acknowledging that there's a lot of scholarship that goes on that isn't written up in scholarly journals. And so I'm excited that we're looking at things like mentions in policy documents and mentions in Wikipedia and tweets and, you know, things like that. These are all important indicators of societal attention and impact. So I think that's a very exciting prospect as well.
And do you feel that there's a consistent way of measuring these impact factors today?
Or no.
Is it something that you need to invent as you go along?
No, I think, you know, the answer is no. I think we've got some idea of how to do that, but I think to do it well takes a certain amount of nuance. And I don't think we're a long way along that path of getting that right at all. But at least we're having the conversations, and you know, there's an emerging band of believers that think this is important. And then we've got in the UK people like Research England saying it's not just all about citation impact; it is about other indicators as well. So, you know, the good news is the funders are starting to think about a more nuanced approach to evaluating research excellence and research impact.
And so this is something you're seeing being discussed on the national level, international level. What are kind of the forums that What sort of collaborations do you have in the, do you have there?
Nationally, absolutely. I think the UK is pretty, you know, is a leader in the pack when it comes to things like looking at impact. And interestingly, Research England, we had a workshop a few months ago in Bilbao that was part of the ACES offering. And David Sweeney from Research England was there talking about REF. And it was interesting because there's quite a few other countries, other jurisdictions that would like to do something similar. So I think the word is spreading. I think people are starting to realize that the REF model is a good model. The Australians are far ahead in there as well with their ERA. So I think the conversation is now happening internationally. Less so in North America, because in North America, the funding model is different, where, you know, you fund at the project level and there's much less block funding, you know, so REF is an enabler of block funding based on sort of aggregated impact, which I think is a very strategic thing for a university system. I think it will come in North America, but in both in Canada and the US at the moment, there is less emphasis on metrics and outmetrics just because, you know, they've got a very well-defined and well-understood project funding system.
You mentioned three sort of trends that are exciting to you that I think we could explore more deeply, the idea of that research is becoming more collaborative, the importance of open access and building on the shoulders of the work of others, and the changing metrics for measuring the impact. I'm wondering, like, what do you see as the biggest challenges or barriers to those different areas, and what's it going to take to sort of overcome those?
Well, let's try open access, because it might be, it's very complex, but it might be the simplest to sort of put a few easy markers on. So open access isn't easy to do, and there are at least two major obstacles. One is that the big publishers have got a stranglehold on us in some ways, and, you know, they make tons of money publishing scholarly journals, and the way they do that is they protect the IP in those journals, and you have to pay to play, you know, you have to pay to read these journals. And so our libraries spend millions on subscriptions for these scholarly journals. And, you know, the last count, I think, for Scopus was in the Scopus domain, there's 17,000 journals. So this is big money. And of course, the universities, we do all the work. We edit, you know, our researchers are on the editorial boards, and we make the editorial decisions, and then they sell us back these very expensive journals. So, and then if we say, well, we want to do open access and we want to have instant access to this important research findings, they say, well, that's fine, but we're going to charge you another fee, an APC, to bring it outside the paywall. And so they're kind of charging us, they're double dipping, they're charging us by subscription and by ABC. So one solution that's really critical if open access is to work is to find a way of changing that double dipping into single dipping and being able to pay a subscription that allows us to publish instantly, broadly, and not have to hide our best research behind paywalls for a year before it becomes public domain. So that's one challenge. And I think Research England is working hard with the major publishers to find a way of doing a deal for the UK that says we can fix that. And, you know, it's going to be a compromise. It's going to be they make a bit more money and do away with APCs, and we have some sort of system subscription. So that's problem one. I think problem two is how do we store all this data, you know, for open science, and how do we make sure that scientists know where to find it, and it's coded in such a way that the metadata will indicate, you know, so that researchers can find the right data set. So I think that's the secondary issue, and that's one of repositories, national repositories, or at least connected repositories with some sort of common classification systems that makes it easy to locate data sets. So I think open access and open science, those are the two biggest problems that we have not yet solved, that I think we could solve, and ultimately the world would be a better place and science would be a better place.
What's your perspective on the way and the direction and the pace in which it will continue to evolve?
Well, I spoke to David Sweeney. I had a very interesting workshop I hosted at King's recently on impact of research in society. And David Sweeney was one of our speakers. And he told us as a group that there was advanced negotiations with the major funders. And so I'm very hopeful that... instead of, the Norwegian government and the Californian government, they said, oh, we're just not going to pay the subscription. You know, we're just going to bail out of the Elsevier stranglehold. I'm hoping, and I think that what David was telling us was that, you know, they have advanced negotiations that are mutually beneficial for the publishers and the research providers that will get us to some sort of Plan S compliant access so that we can publish in top journals and at the same time not being double charged for APCs. So I'm taking it on trust that those negotiations are going to be successful.
Going back to your kind of your role and institution, you know, you're working a lot with researchers, obviously supporting day to day. What do you qualify as the main priorities in terms of your role?
Yeah, well, my role is really operational, and I'm trying to get increase their productivity. So, I think my priorities are very mundane business priorities. So, priority one, if you think about what we're trying to do and create world-class research. I've often used the analogy of a moonshot, right? And if you're going to get to the moon, you know, it's three things you need, right? You need great astronauts. That's the researchers, right? And the deans constantly hire really good researchers. And then the drag, you know, is the shape of the spaceship. And reducing drag so that you can escape gravity is really important. And that's really my job, is to reduce drag. And so if I have smart systems that are highly usable, that researchers can cost their projects and then easily submit them to the funder, then that's all reducing administrative burden and drag. And then the third thing that's important in this moonshot analogy is fuel. And fuel is the sort of things that we provide that help researchers succeed. So research development, we help them write better grants that are more competitive and have a higher success rate. We provide them with world-class facilities, you know, the best NMRs and the best space and the best microscopes, you know, so that's infrastructure. That's the stuff that I control, is the second two of those three levers. And so my priorities are providing the very best facilities, the systems that will provide the least administrative friction and burden, whether it's applying for compliance certificates or just getting their grant proposal developed and through the system and submitted to the funder. And then once they get funded, making sure that they can procure research staff and research supplies as easily as possible. You know, those are the things. Reducing administrative burden and accelerating research are really the two levers that I control that I really need to optimize to be successful.
Yep. So the reducing the burden is really interesting for us. You mentioned a few areas, but you know, if you can expand, or if it makes sense, what are the main friction areas today for researchers? Where can we make the most improvement?
Yeah, well, look, I'll give you an example. I mean, at the moment, when we cost a project before we submit a proposal, at the moment, it's a kind of paper-based negotiation. So we say, okay, researcher, you need some NMR you go talk to our facilities manager of the NMR facility, and you negotiate with them how much time you need and how much that's going to cost, and bring it back, and we'll put it into the costing, you know, the project budget for this, the mission, right? So those processes, even to cost a project, can take quite a while, can take weeks. Now, we're deploying a new system, electronic system work drive, that will allow that to happen in real time. So they will work with an electronic model, will plug in a number. It will flag us that they have a certain facility use. Our facility manager will look at that costing and be able to, in real time, say, well, this is appropriate. So it will take out, we'll be doing that negotiation around project costing in real time, as opposed to, you know, a slow paper-based process. So that's one example, small example. Another example will be that at the moment, you know, hiring research staff is a slow, uncertain process, and we're deploying systems that will make that much smoother and much quicker. When it comes to compliance certificates, so at the moment, if a researcher wants to do some research that involves human subjects, they have to get a compliance certificate, an ethics certificate, from an academic committee that will review their proposal, their protocol, what they plan to do with these human subjects, and they will certify that the proposed research is ethical. And so that process can take quite a few weeks, even months, and slow us down. So if I have a system and a process that is highly efficient, you know, I can shave weeks from their administrative burden in securing compliance certificates. So those are the sorts of things I can do, improving my business process, improving my business systems, that will really accelerate, you know, or reduce administrative drag.
Talking about the pre-award, the funding processes, how do you see the trend for researchers, you know, in King's College or elsewhere? Is it getting better or worse?
I think it's more
competitive?
Well, it's getting better and it's getting more competitive, right? I mean, we have at King's, we have 500 funding sources, right? So it's a very complex, that's why the administration's so difficult, because every one of those funders has different terms and conditions on how we spend the money and what sort of compliance we need to have in place. So that's getting more difficult. I think the success rates are going down as well. So there's intense pressure on us to always have, you know, better and better proposals, more competitive proposals. And some of the success rates in some of our programs are, you know, at the 15% level. So that's intensely competitive game that we're playing. Now, what's getting better is we've got systems, and, you know, you, Ex Libris, own some of those systems, and we subscribe to them, like Research Professional, that does a really good job of helping us understand what research funding opportunities are out there in the big bad world, because we can't, you know, possibly know about them all. So we do have tools like Research Professional that put in front of us and put in front of our researchers quite clever systems that can tell them, you know, and they can put in keywords, and then it will feed them opportunities, funding opportunities. And so that part of the equation is getting better. I think we're doing a better job of making sure that our researchers know the funding landscape that's out there. So that's getting better. Metrics is getting better as well. So we've got SciVal, we've got Insights. We're doing a better job of understanding the value and the research excellence, you know, our research outcomes. So that's getting better as well. Our ability to understand the value of our research and performance manage our research is getting better as well.
Yep.
One thing I'll say that is becoming a bigger challenge. I mentioned an exciting opportunity for us is that we're doing a lot more international partnership. Now,
right.
A big challenge for us is that every country has its own funders, and most don't fund researchers from other jurisdictions. So that causes us a real problem because, you know, if we're working with researchers in the U.S., they have to secure money for the project, and we have to secure money for the project from different funders who may have different timelines, different terms and conditions, programs that don't quite match up. And so, you know, in theory, it sounds wonderful that we're working as international teams, but it is a massive challenge to make the funding programs match up nicely so that we can actually do international team-focused, interdisciplinary type of research projects.
By the way, with your, you know, your experience and everything, how much has, you know, the cross, both cross institution, but even more cross cross geography collaborations have expanded over the years?
Oh, expanded hugely. And, you know, if you look at, for instance, you know, how, what percentage of journal papers from a university have international co-authors, right? The best universities in the world now, that number will be over 50%. So that means over half of the research we are doing involves international, you know, collaborators. So it's huge. Now that number, you know, 20 years ago, I'm not exactly sure what it would have been, but it would have been very small because, you know, so over the last 20 years, internationalism of research has exploded. And there's good reasons for doing it. You know, even if you did it for the selfish reason of you wanted maximum benefit and maximum impact of your research, if you look at the data, you know, an internationally co-authored paper has got much higher citation impact than a single author or a single jurisdiction paper. So, you know, the name of the game for impact is having international and also industry. Industry partnership is massively more productive and more impactful as well. It's all a scale of, but I would say in those two directions, universities have massively tilted towards internationalization and industry partnership.
Right. And I guess that the third aspect is probably the cross-discipline collaboration.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, these international team-based research activities are hardly ever single disciplinary.
What do you see your role as? You know, lowering the friction, or are you also kind of actively involved in finding the right collaborators?
Absolutely. So there's two things that we do that would add to that very much. One is that we have a whole department of research development professionals, and these are people that help researchers with internal peer review. They help them develop the budgets. They help them edit and rewrite their grant proposals. So we have that's the fuel part of the analogy, and we have a huge machine, a huge enterprise to help researchers in that mode. And then the other capacity we have, of course, is the strategic business intelligence. And that's about, you know, we can help researchers understand which other universities around the world are the top researchers in areas of collaborative significance. You know, so it's very easy for us to analyze who would be a good partner in a certain area, or broadly, you know, if we're looking to do some sort of broad bilateral agreement. We now have tools, and it's my group that do that sort of analysis for the university.
Marin, if I can ask, you know, like specifically for you, what do you find the most exciting about your role when you wake up in the morning?
Yeah, you know, that's easy. I mean, I rub shoulders with some of the top researchers in the world. And what gets me out of bed every day is talking to those researchers and sharing in their passion and their excitement of the research that they're doing. You know, I've been a researcher myself. I know what it feels like to be involved in the research process, and it's a very exciting business. But when I get to hear about 2,000 different versions of that and 2,000 different researchers talking about their exciting research, you know, that is a very exciting job. I don't think there's many people that have so much access and so much direct communication with people in our society that think about nothing else than, you know, making an impact and curing cancer or developing scanners that allow us to diagnose diseases, or, you know, doing a better job of understanding different countries and why they do the things they do. You know, that's a very exciting role. That's what really gets me out of bed in the morning.
Martin, thanks a lot for this insightful interview. It was a pleasure. See you soon.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.